I think it's interesting that our spooky episode is falling on episode 66.
You're beating me to my second intro.
Well.
Star Wars, Transformers, Godzilla, animation, whatever else. Rebels, robots, and etc.
Execute. Episode 66.
Yeah, I knew that was coming.
I would actually totally caught off guard by it until I started writing my note for this episode.
We'll add another one and we'll turn this into a biblical podcast.
Another six. Yeah. Well, that would take us a long time. That would, at 24 episodes a year, and we would need another 600
Remember
episodes.
Remember when we used to have 52 episodes a year?
Wait, 52 divided by, it's 26. Okay, yeah. That is 23 years. And even if we did it once a week, it would be half that, right?
We don't do this for
11 and a half years.
We don't do this for 11 and a half years.
It's Star Wars.
It's avoids.
Uh-huh. It's Starformer Zillimation Night. Welcome to Rebels and Robots and Etc. Episode 66. I'm Cameron.
I'm Athena's mom.
This is our bi-weekly chat about Star Wars and...
Transformers. I almost knocked my soda off the table.
Yeah, don't get that on the microphone equipment, please. And we also talk about whatever else we both want to talk about. This week... taking a slight divergence from our usual because we are in the month of November / I guess here at the end of October, a dead period between official topics. I thought it was going to be another month. Rachel brought to my attention today that Skeleton Crew does indeed start at the beginning of December, not the end of December like I thought. So we have a much less of a down period than I had realized.
Yeah, Cameron texted me. He goes, we have six episodes left. And I went...
I was wrong.
I think you meant weeks.
Which I'm happy.
I think
I'm
you
happy.
Meant weeks.
I did mean episode. I was wrong about that.
I was giving you an out there.
So we're just kind of filling the gap here. But you know, it's fun to do a topical episode for once. So because it is the end of October and Halloween is next week, I thought it would be fun to talk about our favorite autumnal and or spooky movies. We have two major ones that are a big crossover. So that is under the umbrella of things Cameron and Rachel both like. Those two that we'll talk about at the end. But I thought until we get there, we'll talk about just general ones that we both enjoy. I think there are some in here that are probably crossover. I'm really interested to see what Rachel has to say.
How many do you have?
One, two, and I'm not planning on spending a ton of time on these, just kind of like a couple sentences per probably. Outside of the two that are we know we're going to talk about, one, two, three, four, five, six.
Frick!
You don't have to do that many. Like I'm going to really just run through them real quick, just kind of a fun conversation exercise. I felt because I really, especially, am interested in autumnal movies. I'm really interested in movies that fit this time of year, the color scheme, the visual imagery of fall, but also the atmosphere and the tone of this time of year. I think that's a really, really fertile ground. Ironically, fall is not fertile at all. But
actually, this is the time when you plant your cover crops. So.
Oh, well, there you go. See, that's what we get for someone versus northern state we live in versus southern state we live in.
You're just from the city.
Well, sure.
You're just from the city.
Fair. Well, just the north and southern part of our state is known for being more or less urban and more or less rural. These are relative things.
I think we do think of different parts of the southern part of our state when we think urban.
Well, these are relative. Regardless. How many... I would love to talk about this, but unfortunately we don't talk about it on the podcast. Before we get to today's subject, as always, we have news and recent thoughts. Rachel, what kind of news you got?
I got two news things. So earlier last week, the Transformers official, also actually unrelated, Transformers Official collaborated with Hasbro for a line of Transformers themed Converse.
Oh, yes. Yes,
I'm
yes,
going
yes.
to order a pair. I'm going to customize them. But so they posted last week this teaser image of the Transformers like word logo panning down in space and seeing this planet. And they're like, we got something big coming tomorrow at 10 a.m.
That looks like Tatooine.
And everyone's like, Transformers? Or no, sorry, I was like, Star Wars? An unholy amount of War for Cybertron games guesses, because they're like, what do you think it is? And there's a lot of people who are talking about, like, are we getting the trilogy back? And I was like, oh, no time. So, would you like to see the announcement?
Yes.
They have collaborated with Star Wars, The Mandalorian.
It is Star Wars.
To make an N1 Starfighter Transformer of the...
That is kind of fun.
The Naboo Starfighter that transforms into Mando. Like a Mando Transformer. It's not Mando.
Yeah.
That's the ship version.
Yeah.
And that is... So, that was kind of... I was like,
that is pretty nostalgic for me.
It's already sold out. It sold out within like
that
the first day.
Me. I have, if you remember, I would think we talked about, back in our first couple times we recorded at my house, I had like a centerpiece on our table, and one of which was the only thing that I had that at all resembled Transformers and happened to be Star Wars was I had Star Wars Transformers of Luke as an X-Wing and Boba as the Slave One. So those are fun, I feel. Like they're like they don't make any sense, obviously, but they're a fun piece of merchandise. But this is probably the first time it's ever been officially Transformers. Because those that I had, they were obviously Transformers, but they were not like Transformers brands.
Yeah, which I think it's funny that I showed you this image and you went, that looks like Tatooine, because it is. And I'm not going to lie, it was really weird to see a lot of the comments who are like upset at Hasbro for this not being a re-announcement of the War for Cybertron trilogy games.
Interesting.
Because all the responses back to them were, this is Tatooine. There's a lot of, this is very obviously a picture of Tatooine.
Everyone's favorite Star Wars planet, obviously, because that's why they put it in everything.
Yeah. My second news piece is very short, but Transformers 1 is on streaming services as of the 22nd.
Okay. October 22nd?
Yeah, as of like two days ago.
So yesterday. Today's the 23rd.
Shut up. Yeah.
Trying to repress facts.
Look,
Rachel, the rules were you wouldn't fact check.
Look, I operate one day ahead of me to get closer to Friday. So you can buy it for $20.
Yikes.
But I did see an interesting conversation because we were talking about like if it gets to streaming, how's that going to impact the box office? But honestly, I saw a good point that probably whether or not this movie gets a sequel. a sequel is the toy sales.
Yes.
Which... Hasbro got me good already, so they already got my money, or they will get my money whenever my pre-order ships. But I did notice that. I was like, I didn't think about that. If the toys do well with Christmas coming up,
yeah,
that'd be kind of good.
I have for a second week in a row, a very tangential piece of news. It does directly reference something we covered on the podcast, but for a very funny way. So this is a quote from an article. Two distribution sources noted over the weekend that DreamWorks Animation and Universal's The Wild Robot saw a noticeable bump and speculated that teenagers and tweens bought tickets to that film and then snuck into Terrifier 3. If you don't know, Terrifier 3 is a new horror film. That's really all you need to know. R-rated.
That's how I imagine Athena looks at the maintenance men.
That they're the... Art the Clown?
No, that she's Art the Clown. That's how I imagine she looks at them.
I see. I just thought that was very funny that Wild Robot got a slight bump this last weekend, and the thought is that they're false ticket sales for teenagers to get into a horror film. I just found that very funny.
You know, I have seen a lot of stuff on TikTok of people really enjoying that film. And
Wild Robot or Terrifier 3?
Wild Robot.
Oh, okay.
And I'm actually... kind of upset at the trailer that I saw that we saw
we
before
about
Transformers.
That.
I'm bringing it up again.
Why? We already talked about
because
it.
Because I'm actually quite upset that I wish I hadn't seen it, because I think I would have enjoyed Wild Robot way more than I did.
You
when
said
I
this
saw
exact
it
same thing.
I'm
last
saying
night
it again.
Why?
Because I feel FOMO. Everyone is talking about how great this is, and I'm like, I wish I.
If the movie were actually, if you were going to like the movie, I think it would have overcome that. I do not think the movie's. I think
that is a good point. I think the high moments
uh-huh.
moment. Sure.
It's so
was
early
high.
On.
Yeah.
So I understand what you're saying. I certainly have gone back and rewatched movies, getting past my own expectations, or like dealing. I now have low expectations because I didn't like the first time. It increases my second viewing. But no, I don't think this is one that's going to really stick. And I might eat those words, but
they got two more books to make, so.
Well, we'll see.
It was funny because I did have someone send me a link because apparently they've already released the concept art book.
Oh, interesting.
They're like, oh my gosh, look. And I was like, cool, because I don't plan on buying it. Yeah, I only really buy it for movies I really like, which leads me to my next fact. I did buy the Kung Fu Panda 4 concept art book.
That's great. I love that.
Because... is it a great movie? No. Did I enjoy it more? I did. Yep. And I already have 2 and 3, and maybe one day, if I'm rich, I'll cough up the $200 to $300 that these scalpers are selling the first one for.
That made me think about, you know, I really kind of forget Kung Fu Panda 4 came out in 2024. Not that it came out, but that came out in 2024.
It does feel like a long time.
It made me want to just quickly look at the box office rankings for the year. And unfortunately, Despicable Me 4 and Deadpool and Wolverine have bumped everything else down. Last time we talked about it, sometime around summertime, before those two movies came out, that Godzilla X Kong and Kung Fu Panda 4 were in the top 5. No longer. Well, Godzilla X Kong is now number 5. Kung Fu Panda 4 is 6.
That's not bad.
Yeah, it's not too. I mean, they've done both very well, made over $500 million each. It just sucks that Despicable Me 4 made almost $1 billion. But it is crazy.
I forgot Despicable Me 4 came out.
Yes, well, you know, I think really only families care about it. That's not something like Inside Out 2 made a huge impact. Mm-hmm. Despicable Me 4, on the other hand. That just, it's crazy that Despicable Me 2, mm-hmm. Inside Out 2 is almost at 1.7 mm-hmm. billion. Like, that is wild.
I do want Transformers 1 to get a concept art book release, because I will buy it.
Yes.
I did text you while we're on this topic. All of the shows, like the Star Wars streaming shows,
mm-hmm.
post-COVID have not received a concept art book.
Oh, yeah. I think we talked about this.
Maybe we talked about it, but I kind of came to the realization because I'm actually especially surprised they haven't done one for Mandalorian season 3 because they did ones for season 1 and 2. I own them. They're on my shelf over there in the corner. But I had noticed, I was like, and you know, there's concept. Well, production has concept art, obviously, but like you see glimpses of it at the end of at a lot of these shows. So it's very interesting that they have not gotten like a physical media release.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that really Disney's really only interested in things that will be highly profitable, not just sort of profitable. I mean, there's a risk of it not being profitable at all.
But I feel like we just got, I think Elemental just got one.
Did it really? That's mm-hmm. interesting. Maybe it's more of a Lucasfilm. Maybe it's less Disney and more Lucasfilm is not that interested in it.
Yeah, Elemental has one.
Huh. Yeah.
I think
I can see
Wish has one.
You know what it could be? There's a lot less that comes out of those two areas. Well,
I'm very much kidding. I'm let me joke.
Pixar puts out normally one movie a year, maybe two.
Mm-hmm.
In some years none. And so they have a lot less to focus on with the number of Disney shows, Star Wars shows.
Mm-hmm.
That that's a lot. It's you know, it's a lot of work. I'm not like making an argument one way or the other. I can just foresee like I'm sure there's a ton of concept art for this. We think that would be more space for like a book, but
But yeah, Wish has one. Disney's
that's
Wish.
That's rough. That is a good indictment of Lucasfilm for not putting out.
Give me concept art books, yeah, and my life is yours.
What other news you got?
That's it.
That's it. Okay, well let's move on to today's topic. Do you have one that you're? I've got a few more, so I'll kick us off.
I've got four.
Other than the two main ones we want to talk about?
Yes.
Cool. Okay, great. One I want to start off with, so talking about autumnal films, is these are not movies I per se like, but I think really if there's any value in these films is that they capture, they're almost always set in the fall, and they capture the colors and the visual appeal of fall. It is 90s Ivy League dramas, like they're set in Ivy League schools, such as, oh, this is late 80s, but like Dead Poets Society, Scent of a Woman, what's the other one that I'm thinking of? It is, now a movie that I actually do like is Good Will Hunting. It's just a lot of dramas in general from the 90s. Not my cup of tea, not movies I particularly enjoy, but like visually,
lots of lovely. People, that makes me think in the same vein, lots of people say Gilmore Girls.
Oh, interesting. Okay, I've never seen it.
Might have also, neither have I, but I have like secondhand Gilmore Girls because in college there are a group of girls, every fall they would watch the entire show.
Funny. What's on first on your list?
Okay, so this is a spooky one.
Sure.
I have some autumnal ones, but this one is very, it's just specifically kind of spooky. Sure. You'll notice I have a trend in some of my, in this. We're going to go with a good finally aged movie from 1998, Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island.
Very good, very good.
Which is, it's not even an argument. It's the best Scooby-Doo film. If you haven't seen it, go watch it. If you have seen it, go watch it again, because that's what I do.
Now, this was, yeah, this is direct-to-video.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, it's a fun aspect because it's set some time after the gang has met. Mm-hmm. And they're all like in their careers until they're all brought together again as like a reunion to this area. Daphne and Fred have a show, Cuties. Ironically, Fred is voiced by Frank Welker.
Is he really?
Yeah, straight up.
Yeah, there it is.
So, who also voices Megatron? If you haven't listened to any other episode of this podcast, just letting you guys know. Uh-huh. Mark Hamill is also in that.
Yeah, as Snakebite Scruggs.
And Jim Cummings.
Yep, see that?
So, kind of a stacked cast. But it's a fun one. It's probably, I think it's one of the scarier films just because it's a little bit darker in tone. Mm-hmm. Can I give spoilers on a movie?
Go for it. This movie is almost 30 years old, like 25 years old. So please.
26, actually.
Okay.
So the zombies are real. That's what they find out. They're really? Trying to find. Have you not seen this?
No, I'm not.
Oh,
a big
my
Scooby-Doo
gosh.
Guy.
Okay.
So continue.
I don't know if I can. wow. So the zombies are real. So Daphne, they get the gang back together because they're on this. She talks about their adventures. That's what she's famous for. And so they're on this trip to go find a real monster.
Okay.
They have a bunch of, there's a fun montage. They finally end up at this plantation house in Louisiana. and yeah, so sometimes you're like, but these zombies that they encounter are real zombies. They're not fake. It's not a big, ooh, it's a corporate trying to defend an oil rig. It's like, it is, they're real, genuine, bona fide zombies and spirits in this film. It's good.
To me, that is something I don't want out of a Scooby-Doo story. Is the Scooby-Doo stories I have liked is at the end of the day, there is nothing paranormal happening.
Oh no, this is like wild. And there's cats in it. There's so many cats in this film, Cameron.
Well, it's funny that you say Cats, because I was actually just looking up a quick tangent.
The Cats movie, which is the scariest film ever.
Sure. Allison has finally seen My Neighbor Totoro. We watched it the other day.
Oh, nice.
And I saw Frank Welker's name in the credits, but I kept meaning to go back and look up. He is one, the cat bus. But he's also Totoro. I did not know this.
If you watch a movie and there's an animal noise somewhere. No, I'm being dead serious. If you look up a film and there's an animal noise, like a roar somewhere in it, 9 times out of 10, it's Frank Welker. The roars in The Lion King were not lion roars, because lion roars in real life they're not as cool as they sound in the movie. Uh-huh. Half of it is tigers and the other half is Frank Welker yelling in a trash can.
Yep. So good.
So if you see him in a cast and you're like, who did he play? Chances are he's the animal.
That's so good. Anyway, sorry, just a quick divergence.
Feral man.
My next one goes back to Autumnal. Something I think obviously the visual aesthetic of the fall is really lovely for films. But I also love, I mean, like a lot of films deal with life and death anyways, but I do think fall time is a phenomenal setting for that, because it just visually is reinforcing that theme. And so I think a movie that does that incredibly well is Iron Giant. It is a lot of scenes set in the woods. I love Iron Giant so much. And just, I just think of the one, the kid wearing the clothes he's wearing is so love, like so good for fall. The 1950s is a great time to set something for the fall. There's some strong connection between the 50s and the fall in my mind.
Well, and we have a friend who dresses a lot like the tortured poet character.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yep.
Tag yourself in the review if you feel called out right now.
But I just think of the scene where the Iron Giant sees the deer dead, and this like giant childlike robot has to like learn about death, and they're in the forest with the trees and the leaves are all orange. That movie gets a lot of praise for a lot of things. This is just, I think, another thing that it does so exceptionally well.
Did he step on the deer?
No, some hunter shot it. And he had just been like having a really tender moment with the deer a moment earlier.
There's a very Iron Giant moment in the current Transformers iteration.
Yes, we've talked about this. What's next on your list?
Okay, so this is a show that came out in 2010. It's Scooby-Doo Mystery Incorporated.
Yes, I almost said this. I'm glad
I
didn't.
My gosh.
I actually have seen all of this show.
This show. My dad is a huge Scooby-Doo fan. So we were raised. This show's in our blood, in our genetics. Like this was like growing up, we watched all of Scooby-Doo except for the live action. My parents did not like it. My dad told me when they saw that first live action Scooby-Doo movie and they kicked Scrappy out in the road, people cheered. Anyways, my dad kind of has beef with this character. I love it. So Scooby-Doo Mystery Incorporated only has 2 seasons, came out in 2010. And honestly, in terms of Scooby-Doo, it's actually kind of, it's in a pretty dark vein in comparison to other Scooby-Doo.
And it's serialized as well.
Yes.
Which I quite enjoyed.
They're in this island, which is also kind of seems almost to be like northeastern United States, like New Hampshire, which is a very fall location. Yes. There's something about Northeast United States in the fall.
Absolutely.
Maine, New Hampshire, maybe because they just have the prettiest probably trees for it.
Sure.
So this show, they live in Crystal Cove, which is a small town with like a history of spooky happenings. Mm-hmm. And as you go through the show, you learn more about, there seems to be this curse. Mm-hmm. And every so many years, a group of kids and their animal mascot get together trying to solve the curse of Crystal Cove, and they all go missing.
Okay.
Every single time.
Yes.
And so it's almost like this area of like history repeating itself. And I won't actually say spoilers for this one, because go watch it. It's really good. It's actually quite disappointing that it did not get a third season, or it seemed they might have were expecting to go on a spinoff. But this one, it's definitely got some not scary moments, but it's very kind of autumn theme, not autumn themed, but you've got that air of like spooky.
Yeah, no, it's good. That's a good one for sure. I think that was a good modern translation of that show. And yeah, I think
you also have
a fun Halloween watch.
Frank Welker as Scooby-Doo.
Yep.
Because if you look him up, he's an animal half the time.
And he's also Fred Jones as well.
Oh, in yes.
That. Another autumnal, my last like fully autumnal one until we go into spooky. Anyone who knows me will not be, I don't think, surprised to hear this one. But
I like how you looked at Athena.
This is actually the first of three stop motion films, which is a really interesting coincidence. Fantastic Mr. Fox. Just the entire movie is almost entirely orange. You have really...
I know. I don't know how we've been friends for so many years that we've just never watched it.
Oh, man. Just, I mean, it's about a fox. He's already orange.
He's fantastic.
And he lives in a tree, mm-hmm. or lives under a tree specifically.
I've seen the realty episode, like, scenes.
When he's buying the apartment. Great sequence. Just the land. There's so many beautiful landscape shots in this movie.
Why are your pants tucked in your shirt or something like that?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure about that particular line of dialogue, but just beautiful landscape shots, the inclusion of nature. There's, I think, one of the best reoccurring themes that we see in autumnal set films is the onset of winter. Like a great thing about fall is like fall is so beautiful, but like in keeping with that death or change or kind of dread of the in these stories is the like the threat of winter suddenly coming. And so there's like a great shot where like the snow is starting, and it's not necessarily about death, though death is a looming threat in this show. It's much more about change, and it just Wes Anderson, the director, his particular color palette as well, just you know, famous for the pastels, just really lends itself. The music, from the first shot of the movie is the main character, which, if you've never seen these, they are anthropomorphic animals. He's a fox. Standing, eating an apple, standing next to a tree that the leaves have turned, and he's listening to his little radio. He's listening to a song called, I'm totally blanking on the name of the song, but it just all fits. It just sets a tone that carries through the rest of the film.
And he's a fox not voiced by Pedro Pascal.
No, George Clooney, who actually nails it, by the way. Just like absolutely incredible. I don't think he's ever done much other voice acting other than this, but strong cast. What do you got next?
Okay, so we're back again with Scooby-Doo. And Scooby-Doo and the Witch's Ghost.
Okay, I've not heard of this.
Came
one.
Out in 1999. And so the synopsis is the gang meet a horror writer who's voiced by Tim Curry, invites them to go back to his hometown for the Autumn Fest, where they learn that one of the writer's ancestors is a witch who is apparently haunting the city. So you have this like kind of spooky paranormal. I have not seen this one in a very long time. Kind of spooky paranormal of the witch sightings. You get a fun little narrative twist about halfway through, because what does Scooby do without that?
Mm-hmm.
But this is also the first like appearance of the Hex Girls band.
Oh, is it really?
It is. This is the first one that they show up in.
In 99?
In 99.
I thought they were from like the 70s.
No, they're in... They're in 99.
Interesting. I thought they were much older than that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there they are. I mean, yeah. I definitely know what they look like. Every time I had seen those older screenshots, I always assumed
Cameron sees something
that was
in
old.
You're 480p,
right.
And he assumed.
Well, you know.
This one also.
That's fascinating. I did not know that. Wow.
So that's fun. So that one, it's very, very much autumn.
Yeah. I mean, look at this screenshot here on, it's like the first screenshot on IMDb.
I Scooby-Doo has got some pretty gorgeous, background paintings in some of these films.
Mm-hmm.
Like, stunning. I've painted one. It's the top middle.
Oh, that's from this particular
one?
No,
it's from Zombie Island.
Zombie Island.
For some reason, we're not getting your mic anymore. Can you speak into your...
Ah!
Well, yeah, it is coming through. I'm not sure why it sounds so quiet.
Because that was not quiet.
I love the Scooby-Doos. That's great. It's very on brand for you.
I only have two more because I thought of another one while we were talking.
Okay, that's good. I've got four more, so I will go through a couple here. I'll bring these two together because they're both stop motion and they're both by the same production company, Leica, and they both, I think, transitioned from Autumnal into just straight up spooky. Coraline and Paranorman.
Oh.
I've
never seen Coraline either.
Really? Oh, these both rule. That's why, just like one, these are just incredible movies in my approximation. Both about kids dealing with the paranormal. Paranorman especially is very fall. And has that color palette, obviously deals directly with death. That's about a young boy who can see ghosts. Just so fun. Like they, I think when I hear spooky, I didn't want to talk about horror stuff as much as it's just kind of stuff that like is fun for Halloween that anyone could watch. And I think these are very fun Halloween watches. They have a fun element of spookiness. Coraline is just, both are visually astonishing, but Coraline especially just like it's, approach to it is much more spooky than it is Autumnal. It just has fascinating visuals. It is so visually creative, visually inventive, and I think would be, is like if you want to get some people together who if there is any appreciation of animation slash stop motion on Halloween, great watch. Paranorman, I think similarly, a little less universally liked, unfortunately, but I think does really fit the time of year very well. Great cast of characters. I'm actually trying to remember who plays Norman in that. It is Cody Smith McPhee, who I was thinking he's one of those actors I always remember his face, but I can never remember what I've seen him in. I feel like it was something relevant to the podcast. Maybe not. I guess not. I thought he had done something. Like a voice or... never mind. But strong recommends on both of those. And what else you got, Rachel?
So I'm a liar. I actually have four left.
Okay, go.
Monster House.
I had a feeling you might say that.
Monster House.
I have not seen it since I was a kid, so I couldn't specifically recommend it. But very, very memorable movie.
Yes, it does take place during Halloween. It's from 2006. It's about three, 10, 12, I don't know, preteens. And the main antagonist is one of the kids' neighbors across the street. He's got an old house.
Old man is, at this point, Transformers royalty, Steve Buscemi.
Oh my, you're kidding.
No, not at all.
No, really? That's wild. And so these kids keep seeing this house, like, come alive and, like, attack, like, a postman, like a dog in the yard. And so their goal is to, like, find a way to destroy the house because Halloween is coming up.
Uh-huh.
And like, we can't have, you know, trick-or-treaters getting eaten by this house.
Yeah.
This movie actually scared me as a child.
If
you're
crazy
listening
images.
To this, I watched it on TV and it made me scared of our own basement for like a couple months afterward. So it's like nowadays it's an okay movie. It's kind of got some fun moments.
Sure.
I
did not realize it's motion capture.
Is it really?
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I think honestly, it's kind of wild that we've had multiple.
Nostalgia Critic's review of
no.
it. That's hysterical.
It's crazy that because of the Christmas train, the Polar Express, because of that, we've had at least two, if not more, there might be more that I'm forgetting, stop motion capture Christmas movies, but when it fits so much better for Halloween because of the uncanny valley. Like, this is a much...
I never experienced that with Polar Express.
Oh, that animation rubs me the wrong way so badly, especially the faces. But, like, this, the weirdness of this animation, I think, I have not seen this since 2006
when
it came out.
Well, it's also far more stylized.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It's not just like copy paste motion.
But I think this is much more successful visually than the Polar Express, and to a lesser extent, a movie I've not seen, Christmas Carol. I actually falsely did remember that this is a stop motion movie. Obviously, it's not stop motion when you look at it, but it does have this weird jerkiness to it that is associated with stop motion that I think works well for Halloween. But yeah, good pull on that one. I have to go firmly into Spooky, a great comedy that I highly recommend that fits this time of year. What We Do in the Shadows, the vampire. Yeah, that's the TV show. The movie is what I recommend. The show is okay in my mind. It's got some great performances in the show, but it's visually just kind of stale in my opinion, whereas the movie I think is so creative. It's short, like 88 minutes,
which funnily enough, one of the main characters from that movie is in Wild Robot.
Yes, Matt Berry from the show, not the movie.
He's not in the movie
unfortunately. He would be a great addition, but the movie, phenomenal Taika Waititi movie, incredibly funny, also has werewolves in it.
Have I seen this?
Maybe not.
The Nosferatu situation.
Yes.
I have seen.
Yeah, there's, you've got like four different vampires. You have kind of like a couple Nosferatu. Of them are kind of your class. Like, one's clearly supposed to be like Dracula. You have like your quote unquote younger, he's like still like 200 years old, but like younger, like punk rock vampire. A little bit, he's kind of similar to like Tom Cruise's character from Interview with a Vampire.
Friends, but funny.
Sure, which means it's not like Friends at all, because it's funny. You have in the basement, one of the roommates, it's all mockumentary style. In the basement is like a very Nosferatu style Dracula. It just rules. It's just one hilarious movie, but the way it approaches vampire stuff, like oftentimes comedy and parody ends up doing a much better job. I mean, something I did not include that I love, I'm now remembering, Young Frankenstein, another hilarious kind of Halloween theme. It's just a straight up comedy, almost retelling of the Frankenstein story, but it's a comedy. These oftentimes do a better job of capturing what people like about these things than the original ones, because they're so heightened because they're comedies. So if you have any desire for a vampire comedy in a New Zealand / Australian sense of humor, highly recommend. What do you got next, Rachel?
Classic. It's The Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown.
Oh, yeah. I almost considered putting that in. I love Charlie Brown, for sure.
Charlie Brown, which is, you've probably seen it. They're always on
ABC.
I got a rock. It's a short. That is a big
show. The editor is causing some editing problems over there.
It's the Halloween special for Charlie Brown, where they go trick-or-treating. It's that scene where they... You've seen clips from it. Charlie Brown tries to make a ghost costume out of a bed sheet, but he accidentally cuts too many eye holes.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's got a lot of holes. It's where they all talk about what they got at each house, and they all go through what they got. And every time Charlie Brown's like, I got it wrong for some reason, because some of these psychopathic adults are handing out rocks on Halloween. And like, kind of the overarching plot is Linus is waiting in a pumpkin patch for the elusive, like, great pumpkin to appear.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like a little legend. So it's cute. Charles Schwartz, Charlie Brown, always a win, honestly.
Absolutely. 1966. That might be the oldest thing we've ever actually talked about on the podcast, if you don't count. We've never, like, directly talked about the original Godzilla movie. Like, we've referenced it.
We
but it
can!
So this actually might be the the oldest official thing that we've discussed in the podcast.
We probably talked about some actors that are older.
Yeah, as far as like actual like media. I always forget how old those are. I just feel like they're timeless. Like they feel like they're not that old, but they feel like they've always been around. Good stuff. I'm looking at the guy who directed it. His name is Bill Mendez. I was seeing if he ever directed anything else. He worked on a lot of stuff. IMDb is so messed up.
worked. He did a lot of Charlie Brown stuff, and that seems to be he made like Frosty Returns, so he worked on those kind of other like TV specials. There is more Charlie Brown stuff than I even realized. There's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Holy crap! He did animated The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. That's wild.
That's wild.
I didn't even know that existed. In 1979, he did. Man, so many. I would love to see a count on just how many Charlie Brown. This is a ton of Charlie Brown stuff here. He did do Charlie Brown Christmas. It's actually like the first thing he directed, which is really cool. Aww. Good. My next one, my final one before we get to the two big ones.
I got two more.
This is a movie. I want to include this because I think this is probably the least known, and it's also probably the newest of anything that we've talked about so far. It is both autumnal and spooky, but it is like late autumn. Like, it is not orange. It is like brown. Like, it is everything is dead. It is technically a horror film, but I consider this movie much more like spooky. Maybe is kind of too silly of a word. It is more. I'm trying to think of a good word for this. I can't think of the word. I'm trying to think.
It's I'm waiting like, for the title.
It is not terrifying. That's way too strong. It's more just like
suspenseful.
Suspenseful. It's somewhat suspenseful, not psychological. It's you have a sense of dread. It's dreadful. Like you just like have dread whatever's going to happen next. It is a sequel to a very famous film. Have you ever seen The Shining?
Oh.
You ever seen The Shining? Have you actually seen that movie?
I think I have.
Because The Shining is definitely a direct horror film. Like, it is technically a slasher film, even though The Shining is an amazing masterpiece. It is all, if you boil down The Shining all the way down, it is about a haunted house that causes a man to attempt to murder his children.
It's just like a goth Grand Budapest Hotel.
Sure. It is both the ghost movie and a slasher movie, technically, though there is never any direct murder committed on screen. Spoilers for The Shining.
Came out in the 80s.
And Dr. Sleep is the very long-delayed sequel.
Interesting. That's not the movie I thought you were going
to
go with.
So it is. Dr. Sleep is an adaptation of the book that is a sequel to The Shining. It is about the young boy, Danny, grown up, played by, I didn't even think about this when I wrote it down, podcast-relevant actor Ewan McGregor is the lead of this movie, giving an incredible performance as a boy whose dad almost killed him and got absorbed by a haunted house, haunted hotel specifically, and so The Shining, if you don't know, I feel like a lot of people don't know about this, The Shining, the title is a reference to his powers,
mm-hmm.
that he himself, the very famous Red Rum, is Danny himself communicating with one of the ghosts in the hotel. So it is about this young boy who has
Shelley Duvall.
Yes, very famous performance as the mom. He has pushed everything away. The powers, the trauma of what happened to his father.
Ballad.
The very strained relationship that he had with his mother thereafter. And he then decides to clean up his life. And Dr. Sleep is a reference to what he works at a hospital as like an orderly. And he knows when people are going to die. And he like comforts. He can like read their memories and stuff. So he like kind of like shares their own memories with them and like comforts them as they die. And a young girl who also has powers like telepathically reaches out to him, and there's a group of immortal people who absorb the powers of those with the Shining to remain immortal. They're coming after the little girl. All this to say, there's not a lot of actual like directly scary things that happen in the movie. It is just this underlying sense of dread through the whole film. The color palette's very gray. And it ends, as I think almost any great autumnal movie should, it ends with winter starting. They go back to the hotel in the mountains with the snow. And what a great way to end this kind of movie. I just think this is if you're looking for something more adult, but is not necessarily focused on like jump scares, it's more just like a contemplation of death and life. And meaning and trauma and dealing with your own crap that whatever happened in your upbringing. Ian McGregor rules in it. the actress who plays the main villain, Rebecca Ferguson, everyone in it rules. And I watched it. See, everyone, when they think about these autumnal movies, they think of Halloween movies, they think of spooky movies, they think of October. This movie was released in, I think very fittingly, released in November. I saw it in theaters in November. And it matches, because I feel like the quote-unquote spookiness of Halloween is very fake, it's very silly, it's very, you know, it's costumes and it's ghosts and it's... But you get in November and suddenly everything is... The fun of Halloween is gone. And... Things are much more, like, the leaves are fully dead.
You're only left with the seasonal affective disorder.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say. This movie really captures that. This is not Halloween fun. This is, like, adult, actual, like, sadness that I think is very artistic and well accomplished. A lot of people didn't see it. I love that I see it. I actually rewatched a couple days ago. There's a 3-hour director's cut on Amazon if you're interested. It and also recommend The Shining, great classic ghost movie, but is not very autumnal. So yeah, that's the end of my list. What else do you have?
So I have two more.
Go for it.
Funnily enough, this movie I'm about to talk about coming about out about a month before Dr. Sleep, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
Let me think. Yeah, I almost did that one too. Yeah, good pull.
Which is one we saw together, didn't we?
I think so. Yeah.
We saw a lot of movies in 2019.
Yes.
That theater pass. And
yes,
COVID,
this is a really good spooky one for sure.
So, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, if you've probably heard of the books,
yes,
which are just a collection of short scary stories, and they're like actually like really kind of scary. It's not like your kid.
Yeah.
They're for children, but when you read it, you're like, oh.
It's like harder grade Goosebumps,
yeah,
almost.
Oh,
and the
yeah.
stories are shorter. They're yeah. like they're books that are collections of short stories rather than Goosebumps, which is full.
The
books.
One that like so stuck with me was the girl who the whole story, this isn't in like the movie, she tells this whole story from the perspective of following her friend around, only to turn out that her friend shoved her in front of a car into the road,
mm-hmm,
and killed her. And that one is just like that. A lot of people who have read these books have like a certain story ingrained in their mind. That one's mine. But so Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark starts with, you know, a couple kids in the Halloween time finding a book and opening it up. And, it kind of starts this curse where all these like scary stories are coming to life.
Yep.
So each kid basically gets got like by one of the stories.
Yeah.
They have an almost like identical situation. You have the kid with the finger in the stew. Mm-hmm. You have like kind of like if they have a fear, it like plays into that. You have the guy that kind of gets turned into a scarecrow. It's good. It's a good suspense one. This is like my Stranger Things, I feel
sure.
like. overall, like a really good group of like younger characters cast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's kind of nice because they were pretty good. They were good, but they're also not at least like so famous.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like when you see Millie Bobby Brown in something, yeah, now, yeah, you're like, oh, that's, you know, she's from Stranger Things or she's from, yeah, Godzilla. So in a nice way that you can kind of watch things and go, oh yeah, you know, you can kind of lose yourself in the immersion. So I enjoyed that one. I want to rewatch it. It, if I remember correctly, the way it ended really kind of like implied a sequel.
Yeah, it is. Does show on IMDb that they're making a second one.
Okay, and then, you know, COVID happened.
Yeah, exactly.
which like,
yeah,
threw everything back 5 years. So that was one. And my last one. Are you ready for this one?
Yes.
Scary Godmother, Halloween Spooktacular.
Is this a Disney Channel original movie?
No.
That was my best guess.
Each
I've never heard of this.
Year, it's a Canadian animated film.
Interesting.
It showed on Cartoon Network like every...
Oh, I've seen this image. I've never watched it myself.
Every single Halloween. It's just... It is a fever dream of a film.
I can see that based on the little clip that IMDb is showing
me
right now.
It is a fever dream of a film. If you want to watch a movie that's totally not scary and where the animation has absolutely not
no the animation
aged
is
well.
Scary I
yeah,
would
the
say
animation is scary and the animation it and is give it a watch if you want to watch something that will make you go, huh, okay.
Would you say this is the Halloween equivalent to Rhapsody Street Kids. Maybe not quite that bad.
Maybe not quite that bad. But it's wild. Honestly, like a cast that I have no idea who they are. I don't know if they've done anything else. It's so wild. People always dog on Polar Express being uncanny. This is uncanny to me. Like this, it's so smooth. It's like the shadows don't work. It's like the shadows didn't render. It's just
Man. Oh yeah, baby. The guy who directed it, his name is Ezekiel Norton. Call out names. Worked on 3 episodes of Beast Wars.
Oh,
that
gosh.
Checks out. Now he did eventually. Looks like he found his founding. This animation style, he found a way to use it to his own profit. At least he made 5 straight to video Barbie movies. Which I gotta admit, I mean, that's gotta be the best use of this kind of animation. That's why Toy Story is the first Pixar film, because the animation at the time lent itself to making plasticky toys. But it took him until 2011 to figure that out.
Also,
16 years after Toy Story.
Also, my hot take is that Harry the Werewolf looks like Miguel from Across the Spider-Verse.
I can kind of see it.
Thank you. I sent that in a group chat and I got flamed for it.
Funny enough, he did work on a early 2000s 3D animated Spider-Man movie as well. Nice. Or not movie, but show.
Tell us in the reviews if you know me and you want me to send you a picture of this werewolf to see it next to a picture of Miguel.
So do you know what, at least the name, how many Scary Godmothers are there? Do you know? If you don't know, that's fine. There's at least 2.
I personally don't know one.
There's at least one more. Do you know what the title is? It's hilarious out of context.
I know there's a second one. It's a
Scary Godmother, The Revenge of Jimmy.
Ah, a sequel.
Really pulls you in. Really makes you want to watch it. Those were fun. That's all the ones you have?
Yep.
Okay, the two big ones that Rachel and I both love so much that are perfect.
Can I have a hot take?
Please.
I don't think one of them is perfect.
Perfect as a piece of media or perfect for this subject?
As a piece of media.
Is it the movie or is it the show?
It's the show.
You don't think it's... Okay, that's fair. We'll talk about it. I was thinking more, though, perfect for what we're talking about.
Oh, yeah, for what we're talking about. Okay.
That is what I'm talking about. I am interested to hear your general thoughts on it, but and that's fair. But no, I mean, perfect is I actually don't think this movie is perfect, but I think it is
okay.
Perfect for what it is, for what it's trying to be. I do love it, though, nonetheless. That's not important. What we're talking about is, we're not talking about movies and whether they're good or bad. We're talking about as pieces of spooky / autumnal media. These are the two best ones in our prox, I think. Would you agree? Maybe other than Scooby-Doo. Like, at least combined between our two interests. Mm-hmm. Number one, Knives Out.
Mm. And should we include Hoodwinked in this conversation? Oh, as
well, you missed your chance on that one. It's not really spooky.
It is scary.
I guess it's
first
a murder mystery.
It's not really on
top. But it is. Okay, you can go ahead and quickly give your connection to Knives Out.
If you watch Hoodwinked and Knives Out, they're the same film. Hoodwinked just came out 20 years earlier and everyone hated it because of the animation. You have the same typecast characters. You can't tell me the Detective Frog and Benoit Blanc are not the same person. It's almost the exact same plot except for the motives. And even then, they're still financially based. That is all I'll say because I want people to watch it for themselves and come to the same conclusion, but they're the same film. Thank you for listening
to my
TED Talk.
Quick question. I'm now flashing back to Hoodwink. So if you don't know, it is about a forest of classic
fairy tale
characters.
Yeah, Little Red Riding Hood, bakery scandal, and it's told through flashbacks and interviews.
And someone has murdered the grandma.
No, they stole her recipes.
Okay, so that was about
she's
to ask. I could not remember if she was dead or not.
Not actually.
Do they think she's dead?
Or yes, they do. Or they think she's been kidnapped.
I see. That's what
they
it
find
was.
Her in the
that
closet.
Was my question. I could not remember whether she was actually killed or not. Okay, that makes a lot more sense that she's not actually dead. So, Knives Out, murder mystery, very much compared to the board game Clue. Someone has murdered an old man.
Oh my gosh.
What?
Clue feels like such an autumn movie.
The movie Clue.
Yeah.
Yeah, good movie. Fun murder mystery. I don't remember it that well, so I didn't put it on
Tim
my
Curry.
List. But Tim and Christopher Lloyd. And yeah, very incredibly fun movie. But Knives Out, Daniel Craig plays a very thick Southern accented investigator who's been called in to figure out who murdered an old man. There's a hole inside the donut's hole. And it's just your classic. There's a big house. Someone in the house killed the old man who did it. Incredible establishing shots of the house.
Mm-hmm.
There they traipse through the trees at some point. You know, everyone's wearing incredible sweaters and jackets. There's a great sequence where one of the main characters eats some soup, like some stew stuff. It's just so fall. Obvious, the connections between death and fall, very obvious there.
And he's a horror writer.
He's a murder mystery writer.
Well, that's horrifying.
Sure, murder, the most horrifying thing there is. I just wanted to give you a space quickly to talk about what I assume is your favorite part of this movie, which is a particular actress in Knives Out.
Oh. Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yes.
She's my girl. I love her. Well, we didn't even talk about any of the Halloween movies, which she's also in.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, not a huge fan.
Jamie
myself.
Lee Curtis slays everything she's in. She can do no wrong, except for the fact that I didn't get to meet her at an airport one time.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's a personal story. I'm not going to bring it up. But I feel like she's just always fun.
Yeah.
And then you also have, I almost said Chris Hemsworth.
Chris Evans.
Some blonde man named Chris.
Yeah. Well, I don't think he's blonde in this, is he? I don't know. Let me look it up.
But in a role, in a non-Marvel role for the first time in a long time, where he gets to not be a goody two-shoes.
Yes. Which is what he was originally known for. It was so crazy that playing Captain America really
typecast him.
Like, it's funny that this is subversive, even though it's very much a return to what he originally did. No, his hair is very much like dark in this movie.
Well, I'm sorry, I haven't watched it.
Anyways, continue.
But so I just really like Jamie Lee Curtis.
And to bring it back to like the autumnal element of it is, I do think there's like a really nice like decaying element to this movie. Like, there's like, just like, it deals with like the nastier parts of fall, like the mud and like the rotting wood, and they even like go into like this closed down
just a building. It's, well, like a pharmacy or something.
No, it's a I cannot think of the word. I think it was a laundromat. Doesn't really matter. Closed down shop. And just like, there's just not that many movie scenes that take place inside a closed down business that's like got spider webs and it's dusty. And just like, the cinematography of this thing is just so well captures the atmosphere of fall.
And you have this layer as well of the dark side of family gatherings.
Sure. Which is very much like fall, like Thanksgiving is that fall. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good point. Yeah.
This relationship of this mega millionaire. Mm-hmm. He's a millionaire, right? Or is he billion? He's
almost certainly a millionaire.
He's basically like a Stephen King.
Yeah.
And you have like absolutely like his family that, you know, people that love him, but after he, you have this also aspect of people who are just like, okay, well, after he dies, we'll get the inheritance, is what we're going to do with the company. You know, like no one wants him to die.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
No one like actively is still a lie. It's like there's a bit of a waiting game. They're like this patriarch who's rich, so they're living lives of luxury, but they all have a motive of getting something out of his death.
Yeah.
Except for his personal care attendant, Marta. Mm-hmm. She's just a young girl. She's a like in-home nurse. She comes and visits him and takes care of him, and she's the one that has like a pure, genuine relationship with him because it's not built on what she's getting out of being paid or anything. Just companionship.
Yeah.
No, it's, and not it's in that
phenomenal.
Way.
Phenomenal. Yeah, and the murder mystery part's really great.
Because in a murder mystery, everyone's the suspect. Like, everyone's like, oh, they all have a motive. They all have a motive.
Yeah.
That this movie really keeps you guessing the whole time.
Yes, that's so true. And that, I think that's a good element of something I was going to mention, which is,
for some reason, when I was thinking about what do I think is a good spooky movie, I was thinking about like Halloween, like movies that would be fun to watch with a group of people on Halloween. There is no movie I've ever seen quite like Knives Out in the way it gets a reaction out of a group. Mm-hmm. I watched it twice in theaters. Once they showed it for free on our college campus, and I watched it with that group. I've watched it multiple times with groups of friends. Every time I watch it, it gets verbal reactions out of people.
It's always fun to watch with someone who has not seen it.
Yes.
And it's even fun to rewatch it, but...
So fun to rewatch. But yeah, it's funny. It gets gas out of people. You hear, like, people, like, as they're, like, figuring things out, you hear them go, ah, ooh. Like, mm-hmm. People are, like, oohing and aahing. It just really pulls reactions out of people. And I think that is a spectacular movie to watch with a group. So it's not necessarily spooky, per se, but if you were putting together a Halloween party, mm-hmm. I think this would be, just as far as pure watchability for the time of year, especially if you're not wanting to actually show an actual horror film, I think this would mm-hmm. hit all of your markers for what you actually want. That would be a successful watch party for this time of year.
And Daniel Craig eats up every scene he's
in. Oh, beautiful performance. So good.
I remember people like, his accent's, it's weird. I'm like, no, that's the best part of his character.
Absolutely. So our final topic for the year,
for the year,
I don't know why I said that, for the episode, just a phenomenal piece of media that captures everything we've talked about. And it's Halloween themed. It's spooky. It's funny. It captures the time of year. It deals with death and change and formation. It's great for a group. We just watched it with approximately 18 people this last Friday. It is the Cartoon Network 10-part miniseries Over the Garden Wall. And it is about two young boys, Wirt, who's like a teenager, Greg, who's like his like 8 to 10-year-old brother. They find themselves in a enchanted woods. They're trying to get back home, and every episode they encounter some sort of new weird thing. It's, in my mind, it's pretty much perfect. I would actually, since we kind of introduced it as you saying you don't think it's perfect, I would like to just quickly hear what makes you say that.
So it's actually not a show I ever seek out to watch on my own. Mm-hmm, I only watch it with people.
Sure.
Because it's a show that I kind of get like watcher's fatigue from it.
Fair.
After sitting through the whole thing. And mm-hmm. I think it's because... It's honestly, it's episodes 5 to 8
interesting.
That tend to lose me. Yeah. I wish, and I don't know if maybe that could have been solved because there's a lost episode floating around there somewhere.
Interesting.
Have you not heard about that?
Well, I know that there's the original.
I thought there was a, because each of the.
I think they cut episodes in the writing process.
Yeah, but I feel like you see that because the lights are lit up the more episode you watch.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that element. That's possible.
I don't know how much spoilers we want to give.
No, just go full spoilers. Yeah.
I will say every time I watch this, the more I dislike Beatrice.
Fair.
The more I'm like, you're actually horrible. I know you've been dealt a horrible hand.
Yeah.
But like.
So Beatrice is a young lady who's been turned into a bird.
And her whole family's been bird because she made fun of a bluebird or something, and turned her and her whole family into woods, which does make me go, were you redeemed?
I do think what's interesting about that character, so for anyone who hasn't seen it, she's been turned into a bird. Her motives, like, you don't really realize. I think what the show does a great job is so many pieces of media directly draw your attention to the fact that something is wrong. Mm-hmm. Like, they will show a character have a very obvious, like suspicious look, or they'll show a character being suspicious. Like, the show is holding back information, but you don't really realize it. And so what you do eventually realize is she has an ulterior motive for helping them get to this magical woman who's supposed to help them.
Mm-hmm. Get home.
You then later realize it's actually to
basically
entrap them, and the woman, just pretty much a witch, mm-hmm. will make her and her family back into humans. But you don't really realize that you don't know why she's doing it. You don't realize, oh, she's clearly must be looking for a way to become human again. But it takes them a few episodes to even reveal that she's a human. They make you at first think she's just an anthropomorphic bird, which is not that abnormal for this mm-hmm. this world.
And so I think that works for me, one. But yeah, obviously, the more you rewatch, the more you realize everything she's doing towards mm-hmm. the beginning is horrible. But it does build up to a moment I love, which is she actually goes to, so Adelaide is the name of the witch. She goes mm-hmm. to Adelaide to take, to not turn over the boys. Mm-hmm. Says, oh, if you turn me into back into a girl, I will serve you. And then our two main characters show up, feel betrayed, and they escape. Mm-hmm. And Beatrice has her reaction to them realizing is heartbreaking. And I do feel like that moment is incredibly well earned. But I do understand what you're saying about her being unlikable.
I would also say, I wish there was a, I don't feel like we see, also, I want to call it fallout, mm-hmm. but I don't feel like there's a lot of fallout after that episode. I think it's episode 7.
Yes, good question. Six. I'm not, it's 7 or 8.
It's not 8.
What is episode 8? Oh, right.
My actual least favorite episode.
With the girl? Me.
No, that's episode 7.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Because I thought episode 9 is the flashback episode. Episode 10 is just the last episode.
We're forgetting Greg's dream episode.
Oh, right. Fair.
Actually,
I think it's great, but I can see why it would be.
It's my least favorite.
It's the least in, like, stylistically consistent with the rest of the show.
It just loses me. I think it goes on for far too long. It feels like, we'll get to that in a second. I just feel like we spent 5 episodes, like maybe it was episode 6. That's not what I wanted. I think it's, is it the end of episode 6?
The end of episode 6 is when they finally do get to Adelaide's house, yes.
So maybe it's the beginning of episode 7?
So episode 7 is when they end up at the...
And 2 Whispers.
Yes.
So, she is at the end of episode 6. Adelaide.
Yeah, that's what I just said.
Oh, okay. Well, you just said when they get to her house. I meant like when they actually encounter her, which is episode 6.
No, they're only in there for a very short time.
I feel like you spend the first 5 episodes building up to Adelaide of the Pasture.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get the reveal with Beatrice, you know, showcasing, let me be your servant, not these boys. And then the boys show up. They escape. And it's never... I feel like Adelaide is just never brought up again.
Because she's dead.
But not just that, but I feel like there's not really an acknowledgement of what happened up until maybe, is it episode 10?
It's episode 10.
Where they encounter Beatrice again. And even it feels like... I feel like there was not really a reaction between Greg and Wirt on what happened. Like their whole goal to find Adelaide was to get back home, and then there is there's an Adelaide, but she's not good, and it's just kind of like, okay, on to the next episode anyways.
My argument would be that that's what episode 8 is. Episode 8 is Wirt being incredibly depressed and giving up, and Greg having to go through this internal like sense of discovery. Which is what the dream sequence is. I'm not saying it's necessarily the best executed, but that is at least the natural fallout of what happens with them being betrayed is that was kind of their only sense of hope.
See, I thought Greg's dream was him dying from the cold.
I don't think so. I think that is him
having some sort of
internal processing slash. So that is the fun of the show, is what layers of what's happening occur, what don't occur. Like the show is playing with that, and there's kind of, it's going another layer deep of, did this dream actually happen? Did it not happen? And that is him reckoning with his own childishness, that because Wirt has given up, he has to decide, am I going to continue on just being the silly goof-off child, or he has taken on the sense of leadership, because his misunderstanding of what's going on with Wirt is that he thinks Wirt has passed on leadership to him.
So that
interesting. I did not think of that.
Because you have the image of the like dog, like this frowny dog in the dream, and as well as the old north wind, like the storm is. He's actually dealing with the darkness, the sadness of what is going on around him, but it is his natural child brain has suppressed it. And he comes back and actually decides to sacrifice himself for Wirt. And that's why he ends up, but his childishness and his innocence ends up at least delaying the attempts of the woodsman, not the woodsman, sorry, the beast to overtake him. And so I would say that is the point of that. I think it is not as strong. I do agree it's the weakest episode, but I think that is, in your opinion, which I think is totally valid opinion, of the show does not really deal with their disappointment with Adelaide. Mm-hmm. I do think that is the point of that episode, okay. In my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, the weakest episodes are 5, 6, and 7. Or no, 5, 6, and 8 for me.
I so disagree about 5 and 6. They're so good.
That's just me. I do enjoy episode 7. I think I enjoy episode 7 because I think it's actually like very close. I think it's very similar to the first episode. Like
in what way?
In like narrative way, like they show up to a house,
find a spooky thing that they don't understand. Thing,
get out. Defeat the ghost. I don't know. I just enjoyed that one more. But yeah, those 5, 6, and 8 are the ones that just, they really kind of lose me. And I don't really get pulled back in until episode 9. And we actually get to have more experience with the boys.
Sure.
I think this is really where we get to see actually more of their relationship aside from annoyed older brother and younger brother. Cause we have that bit where, is it in episode 9 when Wirt yells at Greg? Or is that maybe before?
He yells at him a couple times.
Well, this is the one where he's specifically like, if your mom hadn't married my dad or something like that.
Yeah. I think that's earlier in the show. I always have trouble keeping all the different elements straight. Though episode 9 is a great, I think, point for us to transition into talking about why this is on our list for today. 9 takes place in a small town in the 80s on Halloween.
It's in the 80s?
Or 90s. 80s or 90s. Because I mean,
I thought 2000s. Like, I mean, late 2000s.
He's burning the music onto a cassette tape. Once you get to the 90s, you're squarely into CDs at that point.
I think we know enough people that like doing vintage things.
Yeah, but are like putting music on cassettes though?
Vinyls have made a comeback.
Well, vinyl, yeah, but you can't burn music onto a vinyl, not unless you have a lot of technology.
But I don't know. Anyways, it's not super important.
I think you don't see any modern technology. Modern as in like post 2000. You're not seeing any cell phones. You're not seeing like almost anything that indicates
being good and not giving their 13-year-old cell phones.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything to indicate this is past like 1995. That's the absolute latest, I would put it. It's probably more like between 89 and 92.
Like 2003.
And it's definitely set in the past though. And there's a high school football game, and again, it's Halloween.
Side tangent, those high school football players are absolute tanks.
They're huge. They're
like,
big.
They are ginormous, like far more than your average high school football player.
And I think it's also to go off talking about the football game, a incredible aspect of watching this show is listening to the soundtrack, because not only are you re-listening to the music more closely from the show, you're getting pieces of music that are either very much in the background or not included almost at all in the actual show, and it helps deepen the atmosphere of the show if you have this music in the back of your head. In the soundtrack is this absolutely incredible piece of marching band music that I don't even know where it is in the show. It's definitely not foreground. And again, that just like you listen to this soundtrack this time of year, it's got the marching band music. It's so fun. And it's very, again, very autumnal. Just the whole episode, I think, retroactively reinforces all of the autumnal themes, the Halloween themes of the whole show. And then you then go back and you know, talking about spooky stuff,
you talked about episode 8 where they
7.
Yes, thank you. 7 where they are in this small cottage in the middle of the woods. There's a witch-esque creepy woman who eats dark turtles. You have a girl who seemingly under her spell that turns out to be herself, like, possessed. The animation, we talk about animation a lot of this podcast, the animation of Lorna once she transforms into this mm-hmm. other, so incredible. Insane. It's wild. Animation in general on this, there's the establishing shots of episode 2 where it's just shots of the forest and leaves. So good. Episode 2, also a town full of pumpkin people with giant relative to the normal size.
It's all skeletons, isn't it?
Yeah, they're actually skeleton people, also very Halloween. Turkey, giant turkeys. Episode 3 is set in an old-timey school, which, again, very autumnal.
Ugh, that might be my... I like everything about that episode except the song.
The teacher's song? Or...
No, Potatoes and Molasses is like...
Oh, come on.
The worst song, I think, for me.
You know, episode 4 is set in a creepy tavern. Episode 6 is set on a, like, old-timey... No, I'm skipping 5. Episode 6 is set in an old-timey, like, what is it called? Steamboats slash river boat with... Just, again, the scenery is amazing. The music's reinforcing this. The last episode is just an absolutely incredible battle of good versus evil. You get a quick... flashlight scan, or not a flashlight, the lantern quickly flashes over the beast. You get to see what he actually looks like. The voice acting on the beast is he's not a voice actor, he's like an operatic singer. Just all the pieces come together so beautifully at the end, and I think this show is perfect as a thing can be, and it's just a clear image, great for this time of year. I watch it every year. As soon as we get September 1st, I'm itching to watch Over the Garden Wall. Definitely love listening to the soundtrack year round. Do you have any final notes?
I'm not saying it's bad by any means. No. I don't think it's my... I like watching it with people.
Yeah.
It's not something I would seek out to watch by myself. Because I think, yeah, something about the show is weird. Because as someone who like binges... seasons of SVU. I've taken like a 6-month break.
There's something that's truly spooky.
I've taken like a 6-month break. I'm not going to lie.
Fair.
It's just, I don't know. Something about it, it just feels like, I don't know. Excuse me, watcher's fatigue. Like I get about halfway through and I'm kind of like, oh yeah. We got a couple more episodes.
That's fair. I do think it, I've only ever watched it like all the way through, but I do think there would potentially be an enjoyable element of watching one episode a week.
Yeah.
And that would,
letting it sit.
Yeah. Like from the beginning of September all the way to the end of October. I think that could be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Last little note on that. We will be getting some sort of stop motion special at the beginning of November.
It's pretty short.
It's weird that they're waiting to release it until November. Bizarre. But yeah, viewers, write in. Let us know what is your favorite spooky stuff, favorite autumnal stuff, anything along those lines. And that carries us over to Meme Minute, but it's longer than a minute. It's a spooky minute.
I don't know if it's going to be longer than a minute.
I've got one video and one meme.
I have three memes.
Okay. Do you have any videos?
No.
Okay. Let me quickly play a video for you.
Video.
I am actually, I don't even remember. I just know I have one. I can't even remember what it is.
I didn't make any of these either.
Let's see. Here we go. Now I remember. So if you don't know, Norm MacDonald, very famous as one of the best weekend update hosts for Saturday Night Live, which is their like satirical news segment. This is a clip from the 90s, but they've pasted in... You know, obviously, like the classic news thing, you have an image of whatever they're talking about over a shoulder. They've pasted in an image from Transformers 1.
Here's my review. Not gay enough.
I'm a sucker for Norm MacDonald. I did not expect it. It came out of nowhere on my feed. Thought it was hilarious. What do you got, Rachel?
When the face ID effing up and I gotta lock in.
It's Scar King from Godzilla X Kong. Very good.
I thought that I may have failed to save this meme. Oh. In which case, it's very sad. I'm also totally forgetting. I thought about it earlier today, and now I've totally forgotten.
Also, we're on a third count watching Athena. Me watching Athena go look at her food bowl sadly. I know I said your name.
Go ahead and show me what else you got.
Kids had their fun already. Now it's real men's turn. It's a grid, and under the kids had their fun already, it's the Joker 2. And the now it's real men's turn is Transformers.
That's great. I love it. That's so good.
Anyways, if anyone listening to this went and saw Joker 2, I'm sorry.
Don't tell us about it. We don't care. Man, I updated to the new iOS. They have totally screwed up iPhoto. It was kind of perfect before, I feel like. I feel mm-hmm. like it, like, functioned perfectly well, and it is awful now. Like, really bad.
Apple try not to screw things up in random updates.
Oh, here we go. Here it is. Yeah, I'll show you the image, and then I'll read you the text.
Oh.
So it's an image. George Lucas and Matt Sloan, parenthesis Plo Koon, behind the scenes of Revenge of the Sith. So it's like this, their silhouettes. It's George Lucas talking to Plo Koon. If you don't know, Plo Koon's one of the Jedi who probably his most famous moment is he's one of the four who tried to go kill Palpatine at the end of 3. Orange skin, breathing apparatus, wrinkly boy.
Plo Koon did not go fight
Oh,
Palpatine.
You're right. I'm thinking of Kit Fisto. Yeah, he is in the blue Jedi starfighter that gets blown up during Order 66.
And he saved Ahsoka, famous in the Clone Wars for loving his clones.
He's way more famous in Clone Wars than anything else. He's the one who famously said, the clones say we're meant to be expendable, and he's like, not to me. Great line.
But he does have a fairly brutal death in Revenge of the Sith, because you see a front cockpit view of him exploding, and it's like,
So someone retweeted this image and said, one of the key elements of good character design is that you should be able to recognize them by silhouette. George Lucas is a well-designed character. Hey, don't tell me you can't 100% recognize George Lucas by his silhouette.
That makes me think. A friend of mine did a Star Wars costume theme where people would show up as whatever, and one girl showed up as George Lucas with the glasses and the fake beard, the eyebrows.
That's so
and
good.
Stuffed a blanket I under her shirt that. For the little belly. It was actually kind of scary because we were all walking in and George Lucas pulls up. I was actually quite upset that I was like, I wish I'd known you would have come as George Lucas because I would have shown up as Dave Filoni.
That would have been good. What else you got?
I don't know. I had to Google where this location is just to make sure we're not accidentally doxing ourselves. Kanawha County man sentenced to 14 years in prison for fentanyl crime. And nice. It's a picture of Sentinel Prime from Transformers 1. Yep. So it's kind of a fun wordplay because it rhymes.
Oh, just call him Fentanyl Prime. That's great.
Fentanyl Crime.
Okay, I may have another reel. I have it. Oh my!
I've sent you a lot of Instagram videos. I could probably pull those up.
Here, just a second. Sorry, I have a reel linked. It seems to have not.
Oh, that was me. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Yes, I do have another video. So this actually does cross over two of our shared interest on this podcast, Star Wars, and another one, and we'll play it now.
I hate that. Are you gonna make me sit through this whole? I hate that so much.
So that's the worship song, Good, Good Father, but all the goods have been replaced with moments of Palpatine saying good.
I have one more, and I already sent this to you, but I think it's worthy and should be talked about again.
Go for it.
So there's kind of a popular graphic that is captioned, "Divorce leads children to the worst places." And it's two parents who are walking over like a ditch. They're on each sides of like a ditch, and you have a child like hanging in between them, holding on to like their coattails. And it's kind of like this observation that some that divorce can put children on a negative path. So on the faces of the parents, you have the parents from Godzilla, King of the Monsters, and then you have Millie Bobby Brown as the child in the middle, and the bottom of the pit is just labeled Boston, and it's a picture of Godzilla in the Battle of Boston.
That's great. And it's, that's really good.
It's funny because I had already sent this to you on Instagram.
I guess I missed it because I don't remember that at all.
And you said, that's amazing.
Huh, totally forgot about it. I'm glad you brought it up again because I
it's so funny.
Totally forgot.
It's just, it's funny.
Love it. Good stuff.
Oh, you can make a podcast meme about that. It's replacing Bud. Replacing Boston with podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yeah. Ironically, the podcast guy from Godzilla X-Con.
This is the third time you've said this.
It's relevant.
That... Brian Tyree Henry is the voice of Megatron in Transformers 1.
Yeah,
yes, we've said relevant. This. We've it's acknowledged relevant. This already.
In case you've forgotten, it's important for you to know.
Uh-huh. Well, that ends Meme Minute. As always, thank you to Caleb Jacoby for our intro and outro music. Quick funny thing about our friend Caleb Jacoby, the only person who we name full name on the podcast. He was at our Over the Garden Wall watch party this last week, and I went to make a reference to the podcast. I had this weird moment. I was like, and I told him this. I said, it's very weird to be telling you about the podcast because we say your name every week and I've never actually directly talked to you about the podcast.
That's okay. 7 episodes into us starting this, I saw him at another event, looked him dead in the eyes and went, did you know I have a podcast? And with the most deadpan, yeah, I made the music for it.
Oh, man. Good stuff.
I'll never live it down.
Props to Rachel for our lovely artwork and so-so Twitter account.
Hold on. First of all, you never like any of the tweets, so I know you're not
on Twitter.
I know you're not looking at it. First of all, I take offense to that, but because I am the bigger person, I am going to say thank you for running our Facebook and Instagram account.
You're welcome.
When and I send course, you memes, do you want me to send it to both to you and the
No, you don't need to do that.
I'm gonna do that.
Thank you to our spooky little lady Athena for editing. She's a black cat, in case you didn't know, and this is her time of year. This is her time to shine. Though she is showing her white belly right now, which she's not pure black over there. Let us know about your favorite autumnal and spooky season media. She's adorable. Let us know. Give us your favorite black cat. Give us your ranking. Who's Athena? Definitely S tier of black cats.
If you don't put Athena in S tier.
Next. Oh, we forgot to talk about Avatar: The Last Airbender. And we forgot to talk about that comic, the Godzilla prequel comic. Next time.
I figured we were going to talk about it this week.
Next time.
It's Cameron and Rachel signing off saying, Athena is actually the beast in From Over the Garden Wall.
Tra-la-la-la, tra-la-la-la. That's what she runs around singing when you're not here.
Her running?
Oh, got her. Oh, speaking of which, we have not announced on the pod officially that I have a cat now.
I almost made a joke about it. We've got it.
Official canon now. This will go in the after credits part.
We've got an editor in training.
Cameron and Allison do have a cat named Peanut, and we love him.
Cameron.
He definitely does not have the attention span right now. He's only like 5.5 months old. He does not have the attention span to edit a podcast. But if we ever record at my apartment again, he'll be forced to. That's the position. It has to be, the requirements are be in the house and be a cat.
Athena needs some time off.